Welcome to MTSU On the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. We're going to be talking today with a young woman who ran into an unexpected delay in her college career. 20-year-old Kyla Hallams suffered a pulmonary embolism while she was preparing to do her laundry one day, and all of a sudden her life was turned upside down. She is not an MTSU student at present, but plans to resume her studies in the spring after having undergone emergency surgery. This Lebanon native is going to tell us how she's managing things today and how she feels and how she's managing to get her life back on track. Right after these words from MTSUnews.com.
Here are some of the stories now on MTSUnews.com, the university's news and information website. The presidents of MTSU and Alabama A&M University signed a Memorandum of Understanding December 13th that encourages greater collaboration on faculty and student scientific research in the areas of aerospace, agriscience, and engineering. Under the agreement, MTSU and Alabama A&M will actively seek to participate in and enhance faculty and student research and training programs. Ed Owen of Memphis received his master's degree in aerospace December 14th at the age of 66. The former airline pilot, who works as a flight simulator instructor for Federal Express, became the first MTSU aerospace student to earn a master's degree online. And seven MTSU student cadets were commissioned December 13th as second lieutenants in two branches of the military. Six were commissioned into the Army and one into the Air Force. For MTSU News at any time, go to MTSUnews.com.
Kyla, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
How can you describe what you felt when the pulmonary embolism first struck, or when the effects of it first struck?
Sure,
I should say, what was it like, just physically inside? What was the feeling?
Well, it all happened on a weekend. It was the weekend of September 1st, and on Friday, I started to feel short of breath. I was walking to my classes on campus, and after about 30 feet, I'd have to stop. So it's not as you think it would. It wasn't a sudden feeling. You'd think it would just hit you, but that's not at all how it was. The entire weekend, I was kind of dizzy on and off, and then on that Sunday morning, when I walked down the stairs in my apartment and got to my car, and I guess you could say that's when it hit me, because I just was confused and I couldn't find the keyhole in my car to turn the key on or to get in the car. And next thing I knew, I was looking up at the sky and it was 10 minutes later.
Were you dizzy?
Yes. Well, I had been short of breath all weekend, like I said, but it just kind of got gradually worse. And the less activity I would do, the better I would feel. So I just kind of tried to take it really easy. I thought I was getting bronchitis or something. And but that day, on that Sunday morning when I walked down, that was the worst I had felt. When I hit the last step at my apartment complex walking out to my car, it was like the whole world was just spinning. And it's like that feeling where it's just like going black, kind of like. Mm-hmm. But all I kept thinking was, if I could just get to my car and sit down and take 5 minutes, I'll be fine. I was on my way to church. And that's all I kept thinking, just get to the car. And I got to the car, but then that's when I fell out. I just couldn't. Nothing was in my brain but get to the car and sit down.
And you had your laundry in your hand?
I did. I had a basket of laundry underneath my hand, and which is normal. I mean, it's Sunday. I go to church down at my parents in Lebanon, and I would do my laundry, mm-hmm. and because it's free.
Yeah.
And I got down there, and I remember it. I remember it vividly. Like, I remember walking down, and I remember the feeling of, it felt like I was literally just walking all over the road. And then I fell out. And when I woke up, I just remember like barely breathing, you know, and that's when I called my mom and dad.
And when you came to and you did call them, did you feel any better, or did you still feel that same shortness of breath and dizziness?
It was about five times worse than what it was when I first fell down. And I think a lot of that was just adrenaline and, you know, fear of what is happening, you know. And, of course, in my head, I'm just keep thinking, oh, I haven't eaten this morning. You know, it's this, it's that. You always think of the smallest things. And so when I called my parents, needless to say, I'm sure I freaked them out a little bit, because I was barely breathing. And all I said was really breathily is, I think I need an ambulance.
And when you got to the hospital, what did they discover?
Well, my mom works at UMC in Lebanon. And so, of course, in my brain, I was like, oh, it'll be cheaper. Let's go to UMC. I wasn't thinking about time, you know. And so they came and basically had to carry me to the car. And we got there, and I was fine on the way because I wasn't talking. You know, I wasn't moving, so I was okay. And when we got to UMC, they got me back really quickly. We were lucky. We were blessed because there was no one in there except for me. And they took me immediately to a CAT scan. Before they even came and got me, the doctor came in and said, I think we might be looking at a blood clot in the lung, but I'm not sure. And so they took me, they did the CAT scan. And then when we got back in the room, about 30 minutes later, he came and got my mom and dad out of the room. And so that's kind of when something clicked on in my head, like, this might be serious. Like, and so he came and got them. And what they told me that he said was, he had some doctors around him, and they all said, we're trying to figure out how your daughter is still breathing, because people don't live through this.
How rare is it for a 20-year-old to have a pulmonary embolism?
Oh God, they said, this is my surgeon at Vanderbilt. He said, first of all, this was the biggest clot he's ever taken out of anyone, you know, not any age. And he also told me that, you know, probably 90% of clots like this, especially when I waited so long, you know, because he said, you know, if I was short of breath on Friday, that's when it really hit me. And I waited 3 days. And what the surgeon at Vanderbilt said, if I would have not collapsed that morning and not gone to the hospital, I would have died in my sleep on Sunday night.
Then you'd think of this as being something that would be more likely to happen to someone who is in their 70s or 80s, because we're talking about a blood clot in the lungs, which would accumulate and cause the heart to get bigger because it's blocking blood flow from getting to the lungs. And you would expect to see that in someone with a great deal of cholesterol.
Absolutely.
Or maybe a heavy smoker, mm-hmm. but a reasonably healthy 20-year-old
yes.
young woman.
I've never smoked a day in my life. I'm a singer, so I don't smoke. I don't even touch it, you know. And I don't know. And that's still, I struggle with that every day. And you know, why did this happen, and what is it? And the day that it happened, some of my far-off family and my mom's side, we do have two people that have factor V blood clotting disorder. So, I mean, it's not extremely prevalent in our family, but, you know, there is that one or two person that has it. So they're going to look into that.
There's a possible genetic component
here. Yeah, possibly.
Here.
But they still, my doctor says he doesn't think that that could be it. They have no idea. The only correlation I can think of is I did a 5K on July 13th, and I ran, walked it. I didn't run the whole thing. I didn't walk the whole thing. And then 2 days later is when my left leg started swelling. And my doctor thinks that there was a blood clot in the leg prior to that day, but all the running and the stress on it made it embolize in my leg. And so he thinks that it moved from my leg to my heart.
That's exactly what happens. It has happened in elderly people that it would mm-hmm. the clot would jump from the leg to the heart, and then death would be immediate. I
yep.
mean, when they have it in their leg and it doesn't jump, it's called
yeah.
phlebitis.
Yep.
And
it starts as a deep vein thrombosis
mm-hmm.
and then just goes wherever. And he said it takes it 3 seconds to move up, and usually that's whenever, you know, it becomes fatal.
Wow.
Yeah.
We'll talk more with Kyla Hallams about her condition and about how she is resuming her regular activities after this. This is MTSU on the Record.
The MTSU Department of Art has the newest facility for visual arts in the state, with approximately 50,000 square feet of space, including high-tech computers and computer-driven equipment for multimedia, graphic design, printmaking, sculpture, painting, and ceramics. We feature a visiting artist lecture program and an exhibition program that exposes students to work by national and international artists. This is Jean Nagy, Chair of the Department of Art.
To find out more, visit mtsunews.com.
Kyla Hallams, former MTSU student, soon to be an MTSU student again, is with us. She's 20 years old, and she's recovering from surgery for a pulmonary embolism. How long were you on the table at Vanderbilt?
The surgery lasted about 4.5 hours. It was open heart surgery procedure, but obviously they were going in to take the clot out, not to work on my heart. My heart was double its original size whenever they did the CAT scan and saw the blood clot originally. I had a PFO. I don't remember what that means, but it's a hole in the heart. which 20% of the population has it, so it's not that big of a deal. But the significance in this situation was he said that, you know, whenever you do have that hole in your heart and a blood clot such as this one goes up into your lungs in that area, there's such a higher risk of it going to your brain and giving you an aneurysm and killing you on the spot. You know, aneurysms or strokes or any of those. They wanted to life flight me that day, but it was really stormy. So they brought Vanderbilt's life flight crew to UMC to drive me there. Oh, that's confusing. But in the ambulance, I was joking with everybody, you know, being my old self.
You're perfectly awake and laughing. Not under any anesthesia or anything.
They had given me 1,500 milligrams of heparin, which is a blood thinner, just to kind of get me ready for the surgery. But they pretty much kept me oblivious, I think, and that was because they wanted me to be calm, and I was calm, and they wanted to kind of keep me that way.
So they
they
didn't lie to you, but they kind of downplayed the whole thing a little?
Yes. I mean, they were honest, but they didn't tell me the whole severity of people don't survive this. You need to go right now. Mm-hmm. We need you on an operating table 10 minutes ago, yeah, kind of thing. They didn't ever say that. The only time I got a little scared was when they were wheeling me out of the hospital room to go to the ambulance, and my sister showed up. And I don't know why, but I just saw her, and I was just like, oh, gosh, this is serious, because everybody kind of rushed there, which is not normal. You know, my grandparents are there already, and I was just like, what's going on? You know, in my head, I'm like, come on, guys, it's fine. You
know? How long did you have to stay in the hospital after the operation?
The operation happened on a Sunday, and I was released on Friday.
Now, that sounds like it's a pretty quick turnaround time.
Yeah, I thought so, too. I mean, each day was just so different, because I remember, I remember more than you'd think I would. I was on Dilaudid, which is a super intense painkiller. But that first night, I remember waking up, and they had me on the heart and lung machine after the surgery because I couldn't breathe for myself. And so they were weaning me off of that, which was just the worst part of this entire thing. And so when they took that out, I remember everything pretty vividly. And I remember that night that's when they were trying to figure out what pain medicines would work for me and which ones I would react to and not react to. So that night I had no pain medicine really. And so I was up all night. That was the worst night. But each day got a little easier, got a little better. Monday night is when I got up and they took me for a walk around the unit. And then by Wednesday morning, I was in cardio rehab walking on a treadmill. I mean, things progressed really quickly.
And this is what they call a saddle embolism, which
yes,
means it runs down both sides.
Yes, it was actually one long 15-inch blood clot. And it went from the left lung and over above the heart and then into the right lung.
It's kind of like a snake running through
literally like a saddle on a
respiratory
horse
system.
Yeah, I have a picture of it. The surgeon took a picture of it in surgery because he said this will be in textbooks.
So this is like your ultrasound or something if you were pregnant, right?
Right, yeah. Something like that.
Of course, you didn't keep the clot. I mean, you know.
Oh, no.
That's
gross.
We're not going that far.
No, we are not. I did keep the picture. The picture's pretty cool.
Okay.
It's my trophy.
Especially if it's going to be in a textbook, if it's
right?
going to be
yeah.
part of medical history.
Like, look, that's mine. I did that.
What kind of a regimen did your doctors tell you to maintain after you left the hospital?
You would be surprised. Now, obviously, with a blood clot, I have to watch vitamin K, being, you know, your green leafies, kind of spinach, kale, stuff like that, because vitamin K is a blood clotting agent. So with that, I'm on the Coumadin, which is a blood thinner, routine blood thinner. A lot of people are on it, but I have to get my blood checked about 2 to 3 times a week, depending. And with that, you know, if one day I ate a spinach salad and got my blood drawn that day, it's going to make my INR, which is the number of, you know, the rate which your blood thins, it's going to make it lower than what it needs to be.
So that's really counterintuitive because most people are told they need to eat more green leafy vegetables.
Well, and I need to, you know, as far as the nutrients go. And I can. It's all about consistency. They say that, you know, if I have a spinach salad today, then I need to have it for the next couple of days. You know, that way my body stays at that level and then kind of wean myself off of it. You know?
I see. Okay.
So it makes sense, but it's frustrating, you know. Mm-hmm. But other than that, you'd be surprised because they haven't – the first 2 weeks they had me on fluid restriction because I was retaining a lot of fluid. But other than that, they said, you know, go back to what you were doing. You were an active person, you know.
With the exception of the vitamin K, your diet hasn't really changed all that much.
No. I mean – obviously, for myself, I'm starting to try and eat healthy because this has been kind of like a wake-up call. And so I'm trying to eat a little more healthy. But they said, you know, don't worry about it. you know what's healthy for you, you know what's not. We don't think that this happened because your cholesterol was too high.
You're not eating pizza three times a day.
Exactly. I've always had perfect blood pressure. I've always had, good cholesterol. I do have polycystic ovarian syndrome, which is really common in a lot of women. But that had nothing to do with this.
Nothing to do with the respiratory mm-hmm. system.
But because of that, I was on a low estrin, which is just a really low dosage birth control, mm-hmm. solely for regulation. And so they think that may have contributed because I had been on that for so long. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, birth control contributes to blood clots occasionally. So they're looking into that. They're looking into everything. We're looking into all these reasons, but we don't have a reason yet.
So. Now, years ago when the actress Elizabeth Taylor had an emergency tracheotomy mm-hmm. to save her life, she did not go out of her way at all to try to hide the scar or use makeup to conceal the scar or start wearing turtleneck mm-hmm. sweaters to cover sure. up her décolleté. Mm-hmm. Now, do you consider, I'm looking right here at your chest mm-hmm. and you have a scar I that's do. Running right down there mm-hmm. into mm-hmm. your Perfect. Cleavage. Is it sort of a badge of honor for you?
I'm going to be honest. At first, I was a little, bummed out, oh, this really sucks, right there. and I got to thinking about it, and I'm like, this story is a segue for me to tell people this happened to me, and I made it through it, and, God pulled me through this, and I honestly think that's the only reason that I made it, that and the support of all my friends and, loved ones. And occasionally, when I talk to people and all they do is stare right there, I mean, obviously before they probably stared for other reasons, but now they look at that scar.
Yeah.
And occasionally I just, honestly, I'd rather them ask. Be like, hey, what happened? And I mean, I love telling the story. I don't mind it at all.
Hey, this is what saved my life.
Absolutely. This scar is here. And if it wasn't here, then I wouldn't be here. This scar is why I'm alive. And it's hard occasionally, but if this scar bothers you, then I don't need you. And my boyfriend, we've been together 3 years, and he wouldn't care if it covered all of it. Mm-hmm. He's been there through everything, and he's been great.
We'll take a brief break here, and okay. we'll be right back. This is MTSU on the Record.
Expanding Your Horizons is an annual hands-on science and math conference for middle and high school girls. EYH enables girls to investigate careers in science and math and to talk with female leaders in those fields that are so essential to our nation's future. EYH also provides the girls with fun, hands-on activities and allows them to meet girls with similar interests. I'm Dr. Judith Iriarte-Gross, EYH Director.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking with Kyla Hallam. She's 20 years old. She's from Lebanon, and she will be a student at MTSU once again in the spring. She's recovering from surgery for a pulmonary embolism. And since you are a singer and you do barbershop quartet mm-hmm. singing with other women, I have to ask you how this has all affected your breath control as a singer.
Sure. You'd be surprised at that, too. I have... it's almost back to normal. Occasionally, I'd get a little out of breath because, in barbershop, our uptunes have a little bit of choreography. And I've always been one of those that kind of just throws my whole soul into the choreography because mm-hmm. I like to dance. And so I did notice that a little bit. But as far as my tone and, my range and everything, it's still the same. I've been impressed. It's so funny. On the operating table right before they did the surgery, I was still awake. I wasn't sedated yet. And so they're, prepping me for surgery and everything. And I was laying there and I was like, who's the one that's going to be operating? Because, there's like 20 people in this room. And they brought him over to me and I'm like looking up at him. And I was like, look, I know you got to do what you got to do. And I'm sure you're great at it. I said, but please don't scrape my vocal cords. Okay. They're kind of my life.
And he didn't, right?
He did not, no. The heart and lung machine, when they had to take it out, it really scraped everything. So that next day I could barely talk, but that's just because it scraped. And after a couple of days it got better. And about, I think it was 2 weeks after, I was at Toontown's rehearsal in Nashville, and I was singing tags afterwards. I was singing the, we call it the end of a song, a tag. And I was singing those with my friends afterwards. And I had to hold it because it hurt to breathe in the beginning. And it still hurts to take a deep breath because, you think about it, all my muscles and nerves are clipped mm-hmm. right here. And they had to saw open my sternum. So it still hurts occasionally to take that deep breath. But it's bearable, and it's worth it to me.
Are you a what they might call a belter? I mean, can you really belt it out if you have to, breathing deep from the diaphragm? Yeah,
you could say that. Yeah, I'm a lead in the chorus, and my quartet that I'm in right now, we actually just got first place in our age division in our region in April, and so we're excited. We're going to go to international next year, and I guess you would call me a belter. At least that I'm a belter in the car, and when it's appropriate, I'm a belter. Mm-hmm. And I sing soprano one at MTSU Singers.
Did they put a stent inside of you when they removed the clot?
They did not put a stent. They put, it's called a Greenfield filter, and it's permanent. And so in the valve that all the blood goes up to my heart and just upper body, that valve has a filter, and it kind of looks like an umbrella. It just attaches to each of the sides. And so any blood that goes up there, you know, it goes through that filter. So if a clot were to move again, it would dissipate before it even got to any of my vital organs.
Now, will it be there for the rest of your life, or will you have to have it replaced in a few years if it wears out or whatever?
Sure. As far as I understand, it is permanent, and it's not one of those that you have to change. My dad...
It's not like a pacemaker.
No, not at all. My dad, he's such a jokester. The day after it happened, whenever we were talking about the filter, he was like, now, is this one of those that I can go to AutoZone and change out every couple of weeks? I was like, Dad. Bless his heart.
Yeah. Yes, you're likening a part of your daughter's body to an automobile.
Right.
Thanks, Pop. Always a pleasure.
Well, we grew up in the country. It's all right.
Now, you are a singer on the side, but sure. Is music your major, too?
It was. I was a music major for a semester, and I loved it. You know, I loved singing, and I loved all that stuff. But I kind of – doing that led me, you know, to think that, you know, this is always going to be here for me as a hobby in barbershop. And I don't ever want to lose my passion for it and having to, you know, lean on it for financial stability. Because I think that's where, you know, a lot of music majors, I know a music major that, you know, is still working in, you know, little odds and ends jobs, you know, but, and she has a degree. But she, you know, and that's not, what can you do, you know? I would rather have financial stability first, be able to support myself and my family. And then do this on the side, which I can always do. And I can take voice lessons on the side. I just, for me, and working with my dad in real estate, that's where I figured out that my real passion is at. You know, obviously my hobby passion is singing. But, I'm really excited to start my business in real estate. And I love it. And I love all the numbers and all the crunching you got to do, you know. So I'm excited about that.
So your major when you return to MTSU in the spring of 2014 will be?
It's business administration with a minor in real estate.
Time for one more break. We'll be right back. This is MTSU on the Record.
The Middle East Center at MTSU seeks to promote greater understanding of the politics, history, and culture of this vitally important region of the world. Its mission includes the promotion of outreach programs and faculty research. The center sponsors lectures by Middle East experts and scholarly exchanges. We're especially pleased to offer a new interdisciplinary minor in Middle East Studies with courses in Arabic and Hebrew. This is Dr. Alan Hibbard, Center Director.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
In our remaining moments with Kyla Hallams, when you think about what you went through and you think about the reasons that other college students drop out and say, well, this isn't for me, or I can't manage my time, I can't adjust to the lifestyle, I'm losing touch with my friends, I don't party enough, or whatever goes through their minds. What do you think when here you are coming back next semester after life-saving surgery?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to be honest. I mean, I feel like I can be honest here. You know,
sure.
I have nothing to hide. Last semester, spring semester, it was not a good semester for me. I was just not myself. I had gained a lot of weight back, and so I just kind of was on life. And I failed a couple classes just because I just didn't feel like it. And I was having one of those, you know, woe is me, I hate my life, you know, kind of thing. And then, so this semester was just totally different. You know, I only got to go for a week. But that first week, I was gung-ho. I was ready. I had already done some extra credit because it was available and I had already turned it in. I was like, you know what? This is when I can really get it together and I can do this, you know. And I was excited and I was just determined. And then my world fell apart on September 1st. And so I had a scholarship my first year here, full ride, you know, obviously not housing, but full ride tuition, which is awesome. And all I did was write a paper on the MTSU scholarship website. And I guess my advice is just those scholarship opportunities are out there, especially with MTSU. I think that scholarship site is just incredible. And that's how I got, you know, here for my first year. You know, I was going to have to go to a community college, and which is still great, too. It's still college, but I wanted to go here. And I lost it because I had that semester where I just didn't care. You know, woe is me. It's my life. I can control it. I don't care if I get bad grades, you know. And I think back on that, and I'm just like, oh, what was I thinking? Oh, my goodness, you know. And it's hard to keep those scholarships, but I think it's 100% worth it. Because when you get out, you don't have debt. And there's people with hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. And I think it is a travesty. You know, I think that's just so awful, because I can imagine going to sleep every night with $100,000 of debt hanging over my head and not knowing how in the world I'm going to pay it. You know, and I know I'm going off on money here, but I guess, you know, I had to withdraw. I didn't have a choice. We had talked about, you know, maybe doing an online class or two, but when we came here and they told us our options, which weren't very many, you know, it was basically you either withdraw or you can do this one online class, but you've already missed 2 weeks, so it's going to be really hard for you to get back up.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I'm already so stressed out. I'm already, you know, it just wasn't worth it. And I was so exhausted and just all this reflective time. I mean, and I don't know. I mean, college is in the future, but I'm also, like I said, I'm still open to whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. And if that means go get my real estate license and I can pay for college on my own by that, okay, great, you know. And I think education is extremely important in whatever expertise it is. You know, if you go down to Genesis College and get your cosmetology degree, great, good for you. You know, it doesn't have to be a four-year degree, but education is important. And that, you know, your driving force should be, I'm healthy, I'm alive, and I'm here. And there's a lot of people that can't, you know, and there's a lot of people that have disabilities that have to work so hard. You know, I see, you know, visually impaired people all over campus, and I think, you know, you are an inspiration. You are incredible, you know, because nothing's stopping them. So just, I think I'm a little lazy this semester. I think I'll drop out, you know. That's been, you know, the hardest part, because that was me. That was me in spring, mm-hmm. You know. And I think that happens to everybody. I think everybody has that semester where you're just like, ugh.
You're right.
Oh, I really don't like this, you know. But that's not what it's about, you know. It's about, you know, being driven and having that motivation and saying, you know, it's only 4 years of your life. You can do this, you know. In the big scheme of things, whenever you're 50 years old, looking back, you'll be like, man, I'm glad I did that. And whether that is, you know, a real estate school or, you know, whatever your expertise is in, you'll be glad you did it.
And young people are often accused of thinking that they're totally invincible. Mm-hmm. They'll never OD. They'll never have that car wreck. Mm-hmm. They'll never get sick. That's for other people, sure. Older people, dumber people, unluckier people.
Yeah.
And you have come face to face with the reality that it can all be gone. Just like that. Kyla Hallams, we wish you the best of luck in the rest of your college career and the rest of your long, long life. And
thank you.
Thank you for being with us
Thanks
today.
Thanks so much for having
me. MTSU On the Record, a news and information program about Middle Tennessee State University, is produced by the university's Marketing and Communications Office, which is solely responsible for its content. Read more about MTSU at our website, mtsunews.com. Podcasts of this program are available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes.